Welcome to UN Gender Focus. I'm Deanne Penn at the United Nations in New York. Coming up in this week's program, economic and political empowerment of women essential in Zimbabwe. But first, a growing number of conflicts, a lack of will by member states to act together, and political disillusionment are hampering the work of the United Nations, while much depends on the next Secretary General being someone outstanding. That's according to Dame Margaret Anstey, the first woman to be appointed UN Undersecretary General, that was in 1987, and the first female head of a military peacekeeping operation in Angola in the early 1990s. Having just celebrated her 90th birthday, Dame Margaret tells Donyell Johnson about the challenges facing the UN today, which include the Syrian conflict and the significance of the UK vote to leave the European Union. But she begins by explaining the euphoria she felt as a young UN worker when she joined the organization in 1952, the start of a career spanning more than 40 years.
I have been associated with the UN since 1952. And in those days, of course, it was in the aftermath of the Second World War, and the UN was the most important measure set up to ensure that there was never again such a catastrophe. I was lucky to be young then and to be involved in the very early days of the organizations when there was much euphoria. And, of course, I worked then for the UN for over half a century in many different areas, including development, disaster relief, peacekeeping, peace building, and so on. And it was very much a privilege. But the UN is not held in the regard it should be at a time when the UN is needed more than ever. And the UN somehow has to be able to make itself better known to the world in general.
But do you think it can do that with the Sustainable Development Goals?
Well, they are very important because although there are all sorts of political reasons for conflict, most of the time it is sparked off because there are people who are marginalized, who are poor, who don't have enough to live on. So the reduction of poverty is absolutely essential. I think that the original MDGs did quite a lot, and we have to hope that these will do better. But the point I want to make, everyone talks about the UN as if it was an entity that could do things on its own. The UN is a committee of nations, and the burden of responsibility lies with the member states. And unfortunately, many of the member states do not want to live up to their obligations and provide the United Nations with the resources and with the political support that it needs everywhere.
Now, you've talked about that before, haven't you, when particularly in Angola, where you were leading a peacekeeping operation there ahead of elections, and you mentioned that a lack of resources in particular made your work incredibly difficult and lack of political will, perhaps, as well. And do you not think that we're seeing the same kind of problems with many of the conflicts around the world, in particular Syria?
Well, absolutely. In Angola, it was ridiculous. I had 350 unarmed military observers and 100-plus police observers for a conflict that involved a huge country and 200,000 armed combatants. And it was just regarded then that Angola wasn't important. Bosnia, Yugoslavia, former Yugoslavia were more important. Now it's exactly the same.
There was a sort of seismic shift, wasn't there? The end of the Cold War signalled the end of interest in Angola, which had huge power interests on both sides of the Atlantic. So in terms of seismic shifts now, would it be fair to say that the UN has to, and member states have to, face up to the threat of extremism? Would you categorise the main threat now to global peace not being the Cold War, but in fact extremists and violent extremists?
Well, absolutely. It's the dissatisfaction with governments and politics all over the world. And I hope we don't have to have another really global conflict to bring people to their and governments to their senses and realise that we have to pull together. I think a lot will depend, too, on who is the next Secretary General. It's very important that that should be somebody who has clout, and that clout should be recognised by countries. I would be delighted if it was a woman, but it must be somebody outstanding. It's very important, I think, that we should, we've changed the method of selection, but we should also curtail the length. There should only be one period, so that the Secretary General is not restricted by having to count out a government in order to get enough votes for a second term. It should be a longer term, maybe 7 years instead of five, but then when you're Secretary General, your record goes down to history on what you managed to achieve and not by how many years you served.
There are lots of people who look up to you as a pioneering woman at the UN. What would you say to those coming up through the system? And let's just remind people that you started, as you describe yourself, a humble staff worker in the Philippines.
When I'm asked, you know, what was that, what do I think was my strength? And I think it was stamina. And you have to work extremely hard. You have to be devoted to the ideal of the UN and take on risks. By risk, I don't only mean physical risks, but the risk of failure, you know, which can daunt some women. They so often say, I can't do that. And they don't know what they can do. And I say, well, it's like a swimming pool. You don't know if you can swim until you leap in at the, and I was pushed in at the deep end. And, you know, you can then find out what your true qualities are. But it is something to which you have to dedicate your life.
I think you've certainly proved that to Dame Margaret.
Thank you. I'm still rooting whenever I can for the UN. And I would like everybody to do that, not only the people who work for it, but the general public. They should realise that now we have all this, which I deplore, this terrible decision over the UK leaving the European Union. And we should really be supporting all these collective efforts to bring the world together and to maintain security and sustainable peace.
The economic and political empowerment of women in Zimbabwe is essential for the development of the Southern African country, according to the UN's most senior representative there. Zimbabwe has a good record in terms of the political representation of women, but more needs to be done, UN Resident Coordinator Bishal Parajuli has said. Daniel Dickinson has been speaking to Mr. Parajuli and began by asking him what it's like to be a woman in Zimbabwe.
I have worked in a very difficult country situations like Yemen and other. Zimbabwe, the women get the equal rights and etc. But of course, the poverty and economic deprivation is also hitting them. So therefore, we need to work towards economic empowerment of women. Number two is political empowerment, and the steps up towards bringing them into parliament is a step in the right direction. Third is there are many women as the head of the department and ministries, you call it permanent secretaries, but maybe we need to increase a bit more there. So in principle, I would say, you know, Zimbabwe doesn't have a social or cultural barrier on women.
Can I ask you, in terms of political representation, how Zimbabwe is doing compared to other African countries?
I would say the only country probably which has the highest women representation in parliament is Rwanda. So probably Zimbabwe is the second best. And by the way, we have program between the UNDP and various development partners like European Union and Sweden to help strengthen these parliamentarian, so they have a strong role to play in securing political rights for women.
Child marriage remains a big problem in the country. Why is that?
Well, I think it's a combination of factors. One is poverty, which pushes family numbers reduced. The second is also, I would say, some element of culture or social issues. But compared to many other countries, I think it's still good, and there is an equal representation in the school. So what we need to push is educate, and there is an effort to make a law restricting child marriage. There was a court case recently which stopped the child marriage, and it's moving into a legal issue.
You've been listening to UN Gender Focus from the United Nations in New York. You can follow more of our programs at radio.un.org. We're also on Facebook and on Twitter. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Deanne Penn.